For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868.
Back to Taylor, having a guy like that with his production, how much flexibility does that give you on the D-line, just mixing and matching guys, moving, whether it's moving D-Walk inside, all this stuff, does it help? Do you have more flexibility today than you had, you know, a few days ago?
Yeah, I would say so, because of the skill sets. We're able to move guys around, and it's important that, you know, he learns how he's rushing with the guy next to him, you know, so it's like, you know, the old 4 equals 1, we got to be able to rush off each other. When you're going straight rush, because a lot of times things happen when you're throwing your fastballs, but everybody is, and then you're covering up for each other. So, all depending on what the quarterback is, where he is, and that's time on task. So we're going to have to get that here in the next couple weeks.
That's Matt Eberflus talking pass rush, and the Bears are making moves to bolster that aspect of their team. Let's talk some football with Sam Munson, who is on Twitter at SamMunsonNFL. Co-host of the Check the Mic podcast at the 33rd team with us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Always check out twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. How did we miss you, Sam? We saw you guys over there on Radio Row in the Galaxy Ballroom at the Circa, but you guys were like surrounded by lighting techs and audio people, and there was all, you looked like you were filming a movie over there.
Well, it's a brand new world, you know, over the 33rd team. Myself and Steve Palazzolo fired up our first brand new podcast, really the first kind of live show that we'd done from Circa. So, yeah, it was a fun day of kind of experimentation with the new setup.
So how much fun did you have with that first show?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, look, this is I think it's going to be great for us. It's basically going to be the same show in terms of our long form content, the game previews, the game reviews. But then with the 33rd team, we're going to have the ability to do a bunch more things during the week, whether it's those midweek Wednesday shows, whether it's some other things, bring in the kind of roster of former NFL players, even current NFL players and coaches and personnel that the 33rd team has on their staff. So it's going to be fun, I think, for all of us.
We saw some changes here, Sam, to the Bears' defensive line. They've made a couple of moves over the last few days. And I'm not sure how to feel about it because I do think that the moves are upgrades, but it makes me worried about the evaluations that the Bears already had on some of their defensive players.
Yeah, but I think we kind of already knew that, right? That this defensive line moved in the right direction in a major way with the acquisition of Sweat. He comes in, he really does transform the group, but he didn't fix it all by himself. And we kind of knew that there's a lot resting on the shoulders of particularly the young defensive linemen, the guys up the middle. And they do need somebody else to take that step forward. And if that doesn't happen, we're looking at this group and saying Sweat's a really nice, consistent piece. And then outside of him, there's just not enough to make this a really top tier defensive line. So I think it kind of made sense that they would still be in this market to try and find somebody else, even if they're not a massive, you know, individual game changer, just a more solid presence that you can rely on to go alongside Montez Sweat.
So in other words, don't panic with the message that it sends?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think this is new information. You know, I don't think that they've looked at this and gone, this is a crisis on the defensive line. We need to bring in anybody we can get our hands on late in the process and try and add them to the mix. I think this is just kind of, we know that this group is not a massive strength right now. Let's try and tinker around the edges and see if we can make incremental gains with these upgrades.
What have you thought of Caleb Williams' preseason?
And Caleb Williams has looked pretty spectacular in preseason. It's funny. We've been doing this for so long, and I'm sure you guys are the same. We know that preseason doesn't necessarily mean that much, right? Zach Wilson had a great preseason. So it's not that a great preseason means you're going to be even a viable NFL player. But when you start coupling that with your priors, right? We already know what Caleb Williams looked like in college. It was spectacular. Now you start seeing that still plays in the NFL, albeit in preseason, you know, and albeit not every play. He had a three-play sequence, you know, where it was all of the Caleb Williams highlights in one kind of drive, capping it off with just taking it in easily for a touchdown. That's what he was doing all the way through his college career, whether it was Oklahoma, whether it was USC. So it doesn't mean that he's going to be a superstar, but it's exciting when you start to build that picture.
What's the effect of the Vikings injuries on the larger picture of the NFC North, especially vis-a-vis the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, I think it effectively, you know, it ends Minnesota's season before it started. This year for them is basically a mulligan. You know, we're not going to see what they were supposed to be until next year. Their defense has a chance to show that it can improve, but the offense is basically a write-off year, I think, with Sam Darnold. Maybe we'll get a few good games out of Sam Darnold, but you can't tell when and where they're going to show up. If that happens, you know, with a good version of Sam Darnold on a given Sunday, they're dangerous. Outside of that, you know, they should be the worst team in this division. But outside of Minnesota, I think it is still a very tough division. You know, Detroit should be legitimate contenders. Green Bay, I think, have a fairly wide range of outcomes, but you know, most of them are pretty good. And then Chicago, I think, is the third team that is genuinely battling for the postseason.
Sam, do you think that any of the teams that have disgruntled wide receivers should be worried, not about the guys coming back and playing, but what they're like when they come back and play?
No, most of them, I think, once you get them in the building, they understand that if they play that game, you know, if they truly pout and decide that they're going to kind of mail it in, shut it down, it torpedoes value. I mean, even going back to Randy Moss, right, who might be the best example of this in action, Moss with the Raiders literally just shut it down, mailed it in, decided I'm done with this. This Andrew Walter throwing me the ball is not going to work for me. And yeah, he got the trade to New England and ultimately it made out well because of that. But he had to give up a lot of money to make that happen. They only got a fourth round draft pick back for him. Like, obviously, he doesn't care what the draft compensation is, but I'm sure he cared that he had to give up money because of that. So you're hurting your value across the board, both to the team and to yourself by doing that. So let's, you know, Brandon Ayuk, for example, if they can get him back in the building and he decides the best strategy to get out is be a malcontent, shut it down, not give his best effort, nobody wants to give him the contract that at least several teams are willing to give him right now. So I think once you can get them there, it's kind of all bets, you know, it's like going back to the beginning. You're in a good place, even if you know it has a stop date, maybe at the end of the year.
How should the Steelers go about making the right quarterback choice?
I mean, I think it's still Russell Wilson's job until you decide that Justin Fields is a better option. Now, preseason has given them some chance to see that, right? Some chance to have a look at Fields and figure out what he can be. I don't think he's shown enough yet to be massively convinced that, oh, he's definitely a better option than Russell Wilson right now. I think, if anything, you kind of looked at both those guys and thought, all right, the business was great. You know, we're not paying these guys much. We didn't have to give up much to get either of them. You know, they bargain shop this offseason. I think they did a good job of shopping the bargain bin and bringing in two guys that have potential, that have talent, and could or should be upgrades over Kenny Pickett last year. But so far, preseason has kind of suggested that sometimes you get what you pay for. And if you're shopping in the bargain bin, that stuff is discounted for a reason. And that might be their reality.
To go back to a little bit to my last question, I'd love to know what you think about how things have gone in Dallas. It just seems like a very strange approach when you have so many players that have quite honestly earned a contract. And yet Jerry Jones has been like, we're good. We're just going to roll into the season. How do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, it's not good process. I don't think you can possibly argue that it is. And everyone's sort of looking around and asking why. You know, they do this consistently, but why do they do that? I think the closest thing we have to an explanation is every now and again, Jerry Jones will sort of hint or even outright state, They love the drama, right? In Jerry Jones' point of view, he's an owner first and foremost. He owns the Dallas Cowboys. So what Jerry Jones wants to do is increase that Forbes valuation. Like, that's his goal. I want to make the Dallas Cowboys worth $10, $12 billion, and that's my target. And every time everybody talks about the Dallas Cowboys, that's good news for Jerry Jones' bottom line, right? The drama is what he's actually chasing. And okay, if that means, you know, stretching out this drama and this tension and these contract negotiations in the media, that's what he's going to do. Now, that has a knock-on effect of making the on-field football decisions harder, because you're creating this sort of bad feeling that doesn't need to be there and shouldn't be there. But I think it's kind of part of the design. I don't think this is like an error or an accident. I think Jerry Jones likes this scenario. It just happens to cause Jerry Jones, the GM, more problems than Jerry Jones, the owner.
Now, Sam, I don't know if you're bound by any departure agreements or NDAs, et cetera, but what happened at PFF and what's happening at PFF?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of changeover at PFF and a lot of turmoil and people leaving. For us, myself and Steve, we simply got a better opportunity elsewhere that the PFF couldn't match. And that's it. You know, we started this podcast way back 10 years ago at this stage. And this is our first sort of chance to own the majority of it and to do better essentially for ourselves and our family. So, you know, PFF has sent a lot of people on to bigger and better things. Eric Eager is now in a Carolina Panthers front office, you know, in the NFL. We've had a couple of guys go off to ESPN. Mike Renner is now at CBS. So, you know, the people leaving PFF are not leaving because and going to sort of backwater things. They're leaving for bigger and better opportunities.
Okay, so tell me this. Who's an up-and-coming analyst that we should keep our eyes on?
Oh, I mean, you know, Trevor Sikkema is there, and he's going to, I think, take on the lion's share of kind of our departed show, the PFF NFL podcast. Can't say enough good things about Trevor. He's a fantastic guy. He's a fantastic host. He's great as the analyst as well in the chair. I have no doubt whatsoever that Trevor's going to do fantastic things over at PFF.
Yeah, I've had him on Football Night in Chicago a couple times. He's really, really good. I'm glad that you co-signed on him. That's excellent.
Yeah, the stuff that I've read about the brain drain, it's not that everybody's graduating. There seems to have been some loss of trust or some loss of connection there that's been irreparable.
Yeah, I mean, look, I there's definitely some things that I can and can't say based off our departure. There are things within those articles that are out there that everybody's read that are not inaccurate. But I do think it's true that pretty much everybody has left for a greater opportunity. You know, the ones that have left of their own volition, even guys like Austin Gale, he went on, he literally had a can't turn it down type of offer from the Ringer. Man was literally headhunted by Bill Simmons to come in and help their operation. So, you know, all of these guys that are going are moving on to, I think, significantly better opportunities in their own lives.
Do we know how the NFL is viewing the chip marking for the first down marker, where that's going to be, what the data is telling them about when it's going to be adopted and we can get rid of the archaic chain gang?
Yeah, I think this year is going to be just a sort of experimentation for it and make sure we can get it in a good place so that everybody's happy with the technology and get it in place for the start of next season. And yeah, I mean, I think everybody is waiting for that time, right? The time where it feels like a long overdue introduction of technology, you know, something that should have been there for years, and we can just immediately solve this thing and right away wonder how it took so long to get to this situation. I mean, for a multi-billion dollar operation to still be significantly determined by two guys and two sticks and a length of chain is crazy.
Sam, you brought up Caleb, so I got to ask you this. Who's your favorite rookie quarterback not named Caleb?
I guess it has to be Jaden Daniels at this stage. You know, Drake May has been struggling a little bit in training camp preseason. I think that offensive situation in New England is a disaster as well. So just for that reason, I don't think you play him. Obviously, J.J. McCarthy got hurt. Michael Penix probably doesn't play this year. Bo Nix has looked pretty good as well. But I think Jaden Daniels is the one that looks, you know, like he's already there and he belongs and he could execute that offense at a pretty high level.
How good is Aaron Rodgers going to be at this age coming back from this injury?
Great question. Rodgers is now in this unknown territory, right? And a lot of quarterbacks are. Tom Brady playing sort of 45 still looked like he could play at a Pro Bowl level. We've way past the point now where quarterbacks used to drop off and just immediately decline physically. And I think we're in uncharted waters. We don't know now what the point is where these quarterbacks start to physically decline. And okay, Rodgers' Achilles gave out after four snaps last season, but he's still able to effortlessly flick the ball 55 yards off platform. Like, his arm is still 100%. And, you know, guys like Peyton Manning hit a wall physically. Drew Brees hit a wall physically. But somebody like Brett Favre, for example, never really did, at least in terms of arm strength. Brett Favre reached the point where his body started to break down physically, and he would get injuries that he used to sort of shake off or tape up and carry on, and they would keep him out for a few weeks then. And that's what really finished his career. I mean, if that's the route Rodgers goes down, if they can keep him upright, if they can keep him healthy, then I don't think there's any reason why he can't still be a top-tier Pro Bowl, even all-pro caliber quarterback, and puts the Jets immediately in a kind of contender bracket.
Sam, did you see the video of Aaron Donald beating LeSean McCoy in a race?
I did, yes. I absolutely did.
And like, I mean, I think we all know how great Aaron Donald is, but like, that's one of those things that really exemplifies it. Like, this guy was unreal. And seeing him just kind of dust Shady in that race, and Shady was real, like, he was real puffy chested before they said go. And to see Aaron Donald just be like, yeah, I'm like the best that's ever done this thing. Watch me run past you, was really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. Like, Aaron Donald is an absolute freak show, still in the peak of his, you know, condition. That guy still got a six-pack. He's still shredded. He could go out there tomorrow and still be the best defensive tackle in football. So that's definitely one part of the context there. Number two, Shady is definitely not, you know, he's a little bit out of shape, you know, relative to his playing days. I think he would be the first guy to admit that. I don't think that's a secret. Number three, I'm pretty sure I checked that video, and from what I could tell, Shady was barefoot. So I think we're also understanding the importance of traction when it comes to a 40-yard sprint. You know, I would want something on the soles of my feet to grip for that getaway, because a lot of that damage was done in the first 10 yards. And I think even a slightly old and out of shape LeSean McCoy would be closer to Donald than that if he had something on his feet.
Sam Munson, thanks as always. Look forward to talking as much as we can this football season.
Anytime. Take it easy, guys.
That's Sam Munson of the 33rd team.
That reminds me, I gotta send that to my producer over at NBC, because I'm having Wani on, and he coached both guys.
Oh,
so I gotta get his thoughts on that.
Next up, Dan Wiederer, who's going to join us at 1 o'clock. He had a sit down, a long sit down with Caleb Williams, and we're going to bring you a chunk of that interview next on The Score.
That's a tease for all you listeners out there. Stay tuned.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I think once he's learned the offense and knows where everybody's supposed to be, then he can really start to dissect of where the breakdown happened or what the case may be. But he's always done a really good job of that. He can see a lot of things and chunk a lot of information on the field, for sure. You know, he's always been great at that, understanding space and where people are. And he's been really doing a good job of coaching the other guys and helping those other guys, and they've been helping him. So it's been a process of, you know, two-way communication. So it's been good.
Bears head coach Matt Eberflus talking about his exciting young quarterback. Why don't we hear from that guy, Caleb Williams? He sat down with Dan Wiederer, and this is credit to the Chicago Tribune. If you want to check out the full interview, it is on the Tribune website. So Dan asked Caleb, how would you describe the complexity of playing quarterback at the NFL level at this point?
Yeah, it's tough. Like Tom Brady said, and this was at his retirement, and he said, and he's, obviously he's won 7 Super Bowls, and he's done all these other things, and he comes back after his retirement and says all these things, and one of the things that I took out of it, and things that since I've met him before, it was the job's hard.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be that way. You know, every team is going to be different each week, and even if you play the same team, obviously they're going to have a lot of similarities. You know, how we play the Lions and the Minnesota and all these other teams. If they keep the same coaches, they're going to have a lot of similarities each year, but they're obviously going to try and, you know, throw a bunch of new things at you, obviously, to try and, you know, create turnovers, win the game, all these other things. So preparing, you know, the right way, getting ready, and then when those moments happen, if it's stuff that I didn't see, if it's stuff that, you know, you may have not seen in the game and didn't react to, it's how do you come back from that? And if it, you know, if I didn't see it and I did react well, if I did see it and got us in the right plays or right checks and things like that, you know, all those things work out. So just the job's hard, yeah. To be honest. You know, you get here, I get here around 6 something, a couple hours before meetings, and then you know, you go home and you do a little bit more study in the playbook, the plays, the motions, the, you know, the protections and things like that. So job's hard, and you know, it's going to continue to be hard.
You brought up Brady, so I'll stay there, because I know you've talked about speaking with him about competitive stamina.
Yep.
What does competitive stamina mean in your mind?
Yeah, it's being able to do the same thing over and over, and do it at a high level, and still have that juice and fire about yourself, whether it's in practice or in game. Having that juice, that fire to, you know, lit up under you, whether it's because of things in your past, whether it's just because you're here and you love ball, whether it's, you know, all of the above. You know, just being able to have that fire up under you, all of OTAs, training camp, all the 17 games,
yeah. maybe 20,
whoever. all of just being able to have that competitive fire, and keep, I guess, adding wood to the fire throughout the, you know, throughout the year.
When was the first time you reached out to Brady? When was the first time you ever connected with him?
Right after my season of last year, okay, is when I reached out through. I was reaching out to people that possibly would have his number and that I knew, and tried my best to get his number. Got his number, and then we texted and talked every once in a while, just picking his brain and things like that.
I think it was Dennis Simmons in the pre-draft process who said to me that you're a student of excellence, and you like to look around and see people who are great. And who are some other people, whether it's in the sports world, whether it's football, whether it's outside, that you've kind of leaned toward to figure out how they've had their success?
Yeah. Biggest people has been Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. He's on his 19th, 20th year now, and he can still spin the ball unbelievably, and move and do all these other things. Matthew Stafford, he's been in the league for so long now, and he's been doing it, whether it's Detroit or now the Rams, nothing changed for him. If anything, he got better. And then other sports, I looked into Michael Jordan, obviously, yeah, but Kobe was more my guy, just for mental, just like kind of everyday, yeah, assassin kind of thing is kind of how I want to be. And so he was more, I guess you could say, I connected more with him than more Jordan. Also, Jordan's a little bit older, so yeah, I didn't get to watch his games and things like that in his, I guess, his prime time. So, and hear all the stories and things like that. So, I'd say Kobe, Tom Brady are probably the top that I kind of try and dive into and things like that.
Since you mentioned Kobe and Jordan, did you have a meeting or relationship with Tim Grover?
I have met with Tim before, yes.
Okay.
I have met with Tim.
He obviously knows the MJ COVID mindset. When have you met with him, and what did you take out of those meetings?
Yeah, so I've met with Tim. I met with Tim over dinner one time, just
here, right?
Yeah, here, trying to figure out what, you know, what the hell did MJ do? What, I mean, how did he win? How did he become so dominant? And obviously things are going to be different because it's a different sport and trainings are different and all these other things. But there's always a certain thing that you can always connect to, you know, your sport, whether it's F1, whether it's, whether it's, like I said, basketball, whether it's other football players, whether it's, you know, whatever the case may be, there's always something that you can kind of connect, you know, to your sport and use. So
what'd you learn from him? About
So obviously, you know, MJ, his mental of like not turning off, his mental of like, and this is, I'm trying to think of what he said exactly, but basically, you know, the mental, and it goes back to the competitive stamina, but it's just not turning off. And then, you know, there's a point where Tim said that he didn't like certain things. It's kind of also kind of what Kobe did after his first year. There wasn't certain things that he liked, certain things that he was doing. He wasn't strong enough. He wasn't fast enough. You know, he didn't know the game well enough. And so he, you know, just, it honestly came down to putting in the work. It came down to having that competitive energy about himself, that he wasn't good enough at the time, and he was going to get better, and he wanted to get better, and he wanted to be the best. So, you know, he worked at it, kept going, and obviously he ended up getting 6 rings out of it. So,
okay.
Yeah, did all right.
One of the concepts I've heard you talk about that I really love is KYP,
mm-hmm.
Know Your Personnel.
Nope.
And I love it because it's not just about knowing the skill sets of the guys you play with, but knowing how they're wired, how to push their buttons. How do you describe kind of learning both of those things? Because both those things are important. You're trying to grow yourself, but then you've got to understand who you're working with every single day on a big level.
Yeah. I mean, I got good guys here. I mean, they're tremendous wide receiver running backs and things like that. They've helped me grow and get into, you know, position and getting things right over time, and so now that I'm growing and getting better and things like that, you know, knowing my guys has become really important. So getting around them, hanging around them, it helps me. It helps me for whether it's, I mean, I've asked them, how do you like this thrown? How do you like that thrown? What's this and that? I've asked them, you know, questions about their life, questions about how they've grown up, questions about their family, things like that. Just getting to know them on that level, I think, helps tremendously. Because, like you said, you know, there may be times where I'm not trying to necessarily push the buttons to be mad at me, but push the buttons against, you know, like I may send Rome, you know, a text message of something somebody said, or you know, things that people have said about him, and he'll remember it, he'll dock it down, he'll say remember that and things like that. I'll talk to Keenan, I'll talk a little trash to Keenan, get him going. You know, just small things like that. Getting to know your guys is I think it helps and leads in a tremendous way.
Caleb Williams with our guy Dan Wiederer. I hope he doesn't think he has to become a psychopath to have what he describes as competitive stamina. And I certainly hope
it doesn't seem like that's his stilo. Like, I think that they're, I mean, inside of what you saw the last 2 years at USC, I think that you'd be foolish to think that that guy's not ultra competitive, but he didn't seem to need to be as maniacal as those two examples. And you don't have to take all of it. You take what you need from the examples of Jordan and Kobe and Tom Brady. Take what you need from there.
Okay.
How does it fit with what it is that you want to do? I think it's a really smart thing to do to talk with Tim Grover. I think Caitlin Clark should go talk with Tim Grover.
I hope Tim Grover tells him the unvarnished truth. You know, what did Mike do? Because you want to really know what Mike did?
Well, I don't want Caleb doing all the stuff
that's
that Mike
what I mean.
Was doing.
But unless it
happens in the same way.
All right, first thing you do, wake up, play 36 holes of golf. Then what you're going to do is you're going to come back. You're going to have a huge steak early dinner.
Big old steak.
And then you're going to go play. And then you'll have, I don't know, half a bottle of bourbon and gamble until 3 in the morning. Then do it all over again. And don't forget the who's.
But if you're doing that and you're if you want to live, I want Caleb to have a life. I want all of these guys to have lives. I swear, I felt like Justin didn't have a life. I felt like Justin was just kind of like, I'm just going to go to the facility and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do everything that people expect me to do. Now, it's so weird. Have you seen Justin on the St. Brown's podcast?
No.
It's like a different guy. He's so fun and interesting. Like, we knew that he was, like, emotionally mature.
Didn't we give him every bit of room to be that here if he wanted to be?
I think that when you're... I think there's a lot to it. I mean, we could really drill down on some of it. But I think that he felt like he had to play the role of franchise quarterback.
Okay.
And I think Caleb, to a certain extent, thinks he has to, too. I want these young men to enjoy their... Do your work and enjoy your life. It's the same thing that all of us try to do.
Yeah, just don't be a psycho. Don't be like, they said I couldn't do this and all the haters out there. And you don't have to be, you don't have to be like Brady and find some sort of...
Like Jordan.
Of guru selling snake oil to tell you that, don't eat tomatoes after 4 p.m. or you become a gremlin. You don't need that.
Well, I hate to break it to you. Caleb is on the TB12 diet.
Yeah, he's on TB12, so it's too late.
It is what it is.
But maybe he changes because remember, Justin was a vegan, right? And now he's a pescatarian.
That's right.
Now just he like and Ray are.
Just like me.
Yeah, he and Ray are mirroring each
now,
other.
That's the rule. Don't follow Michael Jordan and Tom Brady. Follow Ray.
There you go.
I mean, look, if you're talking about a guy with a life well lived, it's Ray Diaz.
Follow Ray.
The Diaz difference is real.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you want to hear some of what we just heard plus more, we played a good amount of that interview on the Take the North podcast, which dropped earlier today. Myself and Dan played bits of it and went back and forth. So if you want to hear a little more from Caleb, Take the North podcast.
And read Dan's piece, chicagotribune.com. Check it out there, too. Check out the way that Dan put the words together around the quotes, because there's more to writing than just putting the quotes in. So chicagotribune.com, big thanks to them for allowing us to play that. They did not have to do that, but AK is good people. It's the only AK I recognize.
Ow.
That's right. Amanda Kashubi. That's it.
This group is really good.
Well, you better make it good, fella.
Say, do you recognize the state of Alaska?
No.
Okay.
The only AK I recognize is Amanda Kashubi.
Okay. I'm just checking.
Because you can't keep those HF kids down.
All right. We decided to do something fun in the next segment.
I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
So, I don't know how this happened, but we've designated the next segment as time to share awesome Vin Scully things we found.
You found a Vin Scully story, and I was saving this for a High Noon at some point. And then we were like, well, wait a minute. If we both got Vin Scully stories today, why not bring people a little baseball joy and share them?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that next here on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
But please don't lose that butt. Baby got back.
A true broadcasting icon finds ways to live on well past his earthly existence in ways sometimes you do not expect. And that goes for the great Vin Scully.
I love Vin Scully stories, and I love when he's able to narrate them, and everyone seems to have an encounter with Vin. Even you, right? Didn't you have an encounter with Vin?
I did.
Sought him out.
There are pictures of it, actually, of me with my backwards White Sox hat on, Dodger Town, taking some time to talk to him about broadcasting and about trying to launch a career and what matters, and he was very generous with his time. Could not have been nicer.
Just one of the all-time greats that's done this job and has done it at a level that's just shockingly good for a very, very long time. I heard this story and I was like, man, I'm going to put this in my queue for High Noon later on this week. But since Dan brought up that he had a Vin Scully story, I was like, oh, let's just share them both. This is Vin Scully talking about the time that he Bobby Valentine the Dodgers.
One quick story involving me. One year, I actually wore a Dodger uniform and sat quietly in the Dodger dugout. They were playing the Chicago Cubs. Zimmer was the Cubs manager, and I had asked for permission to do it, and I didn't think anyone except some of the Dodger players knew I was even in the dugout, because I crept in right after the anthem. And I sat there with the cap pulled down over my brow, arms folded at my chest, and I wasn't going to make a move. And at the end of half an inning, the late John Vukovich, who was the first base coach for the Cubs, as he ran by the dugout, he hollered, "Vinny." And I looked up and he threw a ball to me. And I caught the ball, and on the ball it said, "If a fight breaks out, I want you." And it was signed Zimmer. And I looked over and the Cubs were just falling down on the bench in laughter. Some secret that Scully was in the dugout. But he was just wonderful. It was an honor, a pleasure, and a huge grace to have known Don Zimmer, believe me.
It's hysterical.
Here's Scully in a Dodgers uniform, just kind of sitting there.
No one knows I'm here.
Except for everybody.
Vinny!
Hey!
Hey!
This turns out to be a brawl coming after you.
Well, we know Zimmer during a brawl wouldn't shy away from going after one of the greatest pitchers of all time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and a much younger man at the time, and then get thrown face down into the grass.
And that incident created an all-time argument on the score. That was your high. Shut up.
Oh, that's right. Shout out to Moose Vasquez.
Yes, it was. Now, so it so happened that you found that, and I had a Twitter follower named Will send me this because he thought we'd like it, and it is from a baseball history account, like a nostalgia account called Stirrups Now. And this is 2 minutes of when the old NBC Game of the Week was on in 1987, and it's the Phillies at the Dodgers. Kevin Gross is pitching to Pedro Guerrero, and Vin is talking about a brand new concept, a statistical concept that had been created by the then official statistical group for baseball, the Elias Sports Bureau. And listen closely and tell me what it sounds like Vin Scully is describing here, which we believe is the first time anything like this was ever mentioned on national television.
But they have Guerrero. He singled a right in the first inning. Right. The Elias Statistical Bureau did I won't even bore you with all the numbers, but Elias did a study. You know how you talk about this team really needs this player and how this team plays with that player, without that player? The Elias Bureau did a big thing on Guerrero. Now, let me ask you this. How many games do you think it means to have him in the lineup? I mean, get right down to it. How many do you think over 162? What kind of a difference? Walter, I had no idea until I read the article. And according to all the statistics, Guerrero to the Dodgers means five games.
Five.
Now, there's an old language of computer talk where they say garbage in, garbage out. So if you put the wrong stats in, what comes out is hamburger. But I trust Elias, and that's how it came out. He was worth five games.
Five games.
Mm-hmm.
Different between first division and second division,
oh,
obviously.
Yeah. Sure.
In 1987. This is with the benefit of hindsight, now that FanGraphs can calculate such an idea. Gee, what would it be like to, what does it mean to have this person on our team? As opposed to, I don't know, say the concept of a replacement player.
Aha.
Which would give you something called wins above replacement or WAR. What do you think his WAR was in 1987?
Seven.
5.0.
Oh, so it was right on five. Okay.
Now, 2 years before, he was worth 7.8 wins.
That's really good.
Because Pedro Guerrero slashed .320, .422, and .577 with a WRC plus of 181. Which is like, oh my goodness. And then says, yeah, well, he only had 87 RBI. I remember that.
I heard you and I heard you ask Deck this, and I was like, why would you even ask that question about Votto and his Hall of Fame case?
Because there are some people who really don't. I mean, I was curious what he thought, because there are some people who don't think that Votto's a Hall of Famer. I think they're all
why?
Wrong.
Like, what about him isn't?
Counting stats, you know, there's...
He gets on base 41% of the time.
That's not a counting stat. It's a percentage stat. No, I'm with you. I think it's an easy case for him.
He's a 920 OPS.
I think it's an easy case for him. And played, as Deck pointed out, in three different baseball eras, three different statistical eras. But it's
920 OPS, unless your name is Dick Allen, gets you into the Hall of Fame.
But how about that from Vin, though? How about that? There was one article that he read with the very initial concept.
I love it.
Of how to quantify value over replacement.
What I love about it, too, and we all know how voracious of a baseball fan Vin Scully was. This also showed him being willing to look and try to understand the game better.
That's the play-by-play guy, too. That's not Garagiola.
And by that time, what, Vin been doing the job 40 years? Around 40, I think 37 years, mm-hmm. right? 1950 is the beginning of him.
And that was 37 years ago.
Right.
So think about that. That was the distance he had since the start of his career, which is now our distance from those comments in 87.
The idea that he was trying to get better, to learn more about it, to see it from a different perspective.
And how cool he thought it was. And he wasn't saying, well, none of this stuff makes any sense. All I care about is batting average. And that is him not only embracing it, but wanting to share it on the Game of the Week.
Right, going, guys, I found this thing, and it's really interesting. Here's what it is. What do you think? This is kind of cool.
Yep.
It's one of those things where, like, even... I just get so mad because there's so many old schoolers that lean on old school stuff but don't listen to some of the greatest old schoolers. You want to talk launch angle? May I suggest to you that you watch videos of Ted Williams teaching hitting?
And it's so funny because if Studs had let that roll for another minute, you would have heard them describe Pedro Guerrero's at bat. And he rips a high breaking ball or a high off-speed pitch into left field. And they didn't have exit velocity, but Garagiola said, "Boy, they're really lucky that that wasn't elevated, or that would have gone out of the park." And Vin Scully says something to the effect of, "Well, it's like he hit the top of the ball with that vicious uppercut swing he has." And I'm thinking, yes, maybe that's why he has such a high wins above replacement.
Because he hits the ball over the wall,
hits the ball up in the air, and over the wall, and over the infield.
Just like when Chris Bryant was talking about it, and you know, kind of like that line between him, his dad, and then Ted Williams, like, yeah, that makes sense. He's doing stuff that Ted was, there's literal video of it. There's video of him describing it on how to do it and why it's important and why the concept of, well, just swing level. No. No!
Stop doing that! Dan Wiederer is going to join us next to talk Bears and Caleb Williams and preseason and Hard Knocks and everything else on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number
1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.